This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 242 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from shuddersincpodcast.com, and joining me on the line via Skype from Melbourne, once again, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
I am not happy.
Okay, why are you not happy?
I've been playing Scrabble on my iPad Mini.
Right. And what is the cause of the unhappiness? Is it the Scrabble or is it the iPad Mini?
It's the Scrabble. It's the game engine. It's the dictionary that the bloody thing uses.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you want to know what word it played on me this afternoon, this evening?
Yeah.
Girl. G-R-R-R-L.
You're kidding.
I kid you not. I'll tell you. That iPad Mini almost became a Frisbee, dude. You've got three R's and an L and a G, and that's a word.
That's ridiculous.
Oh, man. I just...
See, what gets me is they'll let stuff like that go but won't give you names of places. You know?
Do you know what it won't let you do? It won't let you use the word quo, Q-U-O.
Really?
As in status quo, which has always been available in every Scrabble game, including the previous version of Scrabble. It'll let you have girl. I'm venting my frustrations because my wife's sick of me hearing you whinge about the words that comes up with.
I must admit, words with friends on Android is just as bad. I don't know if it would accept G-R-R-L, but there are some things that you just shake your head at and go, you've got to be kidding me. You'll let this go, but you won't acknowledge that, you know?
Exactly. Now, I also believe we have a little bit of congratulations in order.
Oh, do we? To who?
Yeah, someone got older this week, I hear.
Yes, I did, mate. I did.
So happy, even older, dude.
Thank you, mate.
Pop that in now.
That was last Friday. Yeah.
Was it really?
So,
wow. But yeah, the 62, 63, what are you now?
Yeah, feels that way some days.
And finally, in my ranting intro, I have to say, kudos to Bruce for getting up early in the morning, going taking photos.
Yes, absolutely.
You did it, dude. You did it.
Finally.
And how do you feel about yourself as a human being? Do you feel better?
My existence has been validated. Now, look, it was good. It was nice to get up and go out. And as it turned out, it was a perfect morning to get out and go shooting. I checked Photographer's Ephemeris last night to check the angle and the time of the sunrise. So that gave me some ideas on where to go.
I could have told you where to go, dude.
Yeah. And I also checked
photographically.
I also checked the weather forecast and saw that there was a high probability of morning showers. So I figured this is boding well, you know, because there's bound to be, you know, if there's going to be showers, there's got to be some clouds around. And if there's some clouds, then there's at least half a chance we're going to get a bit of colour. So. Yeah, so it turned out to be quite a good morning. So
yeah, and it was it. You took like 16 shots of the same thing by the looks of it on
Facebook.
That's
exactly right.
pray tell you, well, you're just going to be bothered moving somewhere else, or it was just so awesome once you were there, you just had to keep shooting it.
Well, it was one of those things. It just kept on looking awesome in different ways the longer you stayed, and so I just thought I'm just going to stay and enjoy this, and you know, and you know, muck around with some stuff, you know, some shot with the 10-stop filter, some shot with a two-stop filter, an ND4, and some just shot with a grad. And, and just, you know, fired off 15, 20 frames. And, yeah, well, I just had a good time enjoying myself. And
Good on you.
Kept an eye on the clock and got home by 6:30, which is around about the time that I normally crawl out of bed. So I was able to, you know, get home and still go through my regular morning routine of, you know, brekkie, shower, iron clothes, you know, and all that sort of stuff, and get out the door at the right time. So
yeah,
that's good.
And how far away was that location from your house?
About a 10-minute drive.
Oh, it's pretty good, isn't it?
So not too far.
You're not putting a lot of hard yards in to go out for a shoot. Oh, You pretty much just roll the car down the driveway, really. No point waking the family. I'll just roll down the hill.
My family sleep like logs anyway, so they didn't notice a thing. So, it was good.
Good job. So. Well done you for actually making the effort.
Yeah. Yeah, it's about time. So, what have you been up to this week?
What have I been up to? Not a lot. A couple of workshops.
Okay.
A flash workshop, an understanding your camera workshop. And just planning, I actually started packing my suitcase.
Really?
No, four
days out? That's crazy. That's crazy talk.
Well, here comes the ultimate in lazy, though. So, yeah, my bedroom's at one end of the house.
Right.
The laundry's at the other end of the house. And the spare room where I keep some of my stuff in is sort of just near the laundry. So rather than carrying my clean washing all the way from the laundry all the way up to my bedroom, I just thought just toss it in the suitcase on the way past. So it's not really quite packing. It's just too lazy to carry it all the way to your bedroom. But I've got workshop on Friday. Normally I pack on the day of leaving.
Right.
But I've got a workshop Friday and a workshop Saturday, and I pretty much fly home, introduce myself to the kids, and go to the airport. Right. After the, so there's no time on the day of travel to do anything this time around.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, I'll get my buns in gear and get organised a few days out, which is, for me, nigh on a miracle.
Yeah, right.
So that's going to be my week. A little bit of planning there, a bit of researching, watching a bit more David Duchemin video.
Oh, okay.
I think I've watched hour number three.
Yeah.
This week, and only 11 to go.
Maybe you can get another hour or two out of the way while you're on the plane to Dubai. Where are you flying to?
Same thing. Starts at D, ends in I. Dubai, Delhi, same thing.
That's all right.
It's like 17 hours of travel, so I've got plenty of time to pop a couple of episodes on the iPad mini, because that way I won't be tempted to play Scrabble and scream at the air hostess. That's not a word!
I noticed on Facebook Richard Clark has taken the plunge and bought the video series. Or did he buy a book?
He bought the book within the frame.
The book.
So there's a couple of chapters in, which is good.
Yeah.
And I asked him for a review, so he can tell us is it just me, or is it there's actually some value in this book?
Yep.
Yeah. He also asked us a question.
Yeah. Now, what I was going to say, while we're speaking of Richard Clark, he also posted this on the Shutters Inc. wall. He said, "I found Mike Holman's comments regarding going from part-time to full-time work very interesting. It shows how hard it can be. This made me want to ask, do you have any advice for someone wanting to start charging for their photography work? In the past, you've discussed the value of charging for a service, but how do you know when you're good enough to start charging?" My immediate response to that would be, you're always ready to start charging. It's just the price point that's questionable.
I would say it's like being a parent.
Okay.
Yeah, when have a child till I'm ready?
Well,
you're never ready.
Absolutely.
You're never ever going to be ready. Yeah, so you may as well take the plunge early and get them out of the way so you can go traveling. No, that's just kids. No. You're never going to feel ready, I don't believe. So I think that's one thing. If you're waiting for that feeling, now I know everything I need to know, you'll never be shooting anything.
I guess, Richard, if I could throw in my two cents worth on that, I guess it depends on what sort of photographic work you're planning on doing and charging for. Just as an example, the first major paid work that I got was the tourism related stuff I was doing 2 or 3 years ago for Outback New South Wales Tourism, and when the girl who hired me to do that approached me about that, she said, "Look, this is what we need. Can you give me a quote?" And so what I did was I sat down and I said, I thought to myself, okay, I've got to drive from Sydney to Walgett, and I'm probably going to do 200 kilometres of round trip driving while I'm there, and then I'm going to have to drive you know, the 600 kilometres back to Sydney again. So all up, there's 1,200, 200, about 1,400 k's of driving.
Just so, let me interrupt you for 1 second.
Yep.
Keep talking. I'm just going to disappear for a minute and I'll be right back.
Okay, no worries. So, you know, so I figured, okay, so there's 600 up, 200 there, 600 back. So we're looking at about 1,400 k's round trip. So I worked out, you know, roughly how many k's I'd get out of a tank of fuel, divided that by the total mileage I was going to do, how many tank loads of fuel was I going to need. I think I worked out it was going to be about 3 tank loads, and worked out how much it cost me to fill a tank back in those days, you know, 3 years ago. So I put that into a spreadsheet, and I basically used a spreadsheet to work out my quote, and I just worked through all of the different costs that I was going to incur in order to do this week on the road, shooting this tourism brochure for.
Yes, I agree completely. Yes.
Shush you.
Everything you're saying is, I can't believe it, how much in simpatico we are with that stuff. But.
So basically, yeah, I put everything into a spreadsheet, you know, and worked out what are all the costs that I'm going to incur to do this week on the road. You know, between fuel, accommodation, food, I set out a very basic.
The women's?
Yeah. You know, 50 or 60 bucks a day for food, you know, 50 bucks a night for accommodation, whatever. And I then said, and I then thought, well, okay, and I'm going to be taking a week off of, you know, out of my regular 40-hour a week job at ARN, and I need to at least replace that money. So I sort of put all that together and I presented it to her. She came back to me and said, look, we don't need to worry about the accommodation because we can look after that for you. So we took that out of the quote, and that was how we sort of came to an agreement on what I was going to charge her for, you know, a week on the road doing this tourism brochure. Now, I don't know if any of that is relevant to the style of photography that you're hoping to do and to charge for, but I think it's a good place to start, is just work out what costs are involved to you, and at least make sure that those things are covered, and then work out an hourly rate that you feel is, you know, appropriate for your level of skill, the investment in hardware that you've got, i.e. cameras, lenses, flashes, blah, 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 and make sure all of that stuff's covered.
You know? And then add 50%.
And then at 50%, absolutely.
Because you'll always undersell yourself.
Yeah,
you'll always true. Be cheaper than you should be, and it's very hard to go up once you realise that.
Absolutely, yes.
You can always come down. You can always do someone a deal.
That's exactly right.
If you're on the bare bones to start with, you're in trouble.
Yeah, and there is nothing worse than putting together a quote and having the client go, "Yeah, that's pretty good. We can do that." Because then you know you've set your bar way too low.
It's even worse than to say, oh, is that all?
Yeah.
It's like, oh!
Yeah.
So. You should have added an extra zero to that. Exactly. I shouldn't be doing these $20 sessions. There should be $200 sessions. I had a couple of things as well.
Yep.
Whilst you're building up to that stage of you know, building up your skill level to you feel confident to shoot, anything you do for free, make sure you have a non-disclosure agreement signed that they will not tell anyone they had it done for free.
Yep.
Really important. Happy to do stuff, you know, to build portfolio, et cetera, but they can never tell people, oh, yeah, go see Richard. No, he'll do it for free for you. That's the worst type of advertising you can have.
Absolutely.
Because it sets a base level to start with. Get model releases for all the stuff you do for free.
Yep.
So part of the condition is, yes, you're building portfolio and you will use those images to promote yourself.
Yep.
And, yeah, they will damn well sign those their rights over those images for you. And here's the other thing. Don't post crap on Facebook.
Yeah. When you say crap, you mean...
Pick one image from your shoot, make it your absolute best, and leave the rest on the cutting room floor just to give to the client. Don't show everyone every photo you take. Show a photo.
Yep.
Yeah. Don't... Yeah. You see it all the time. You see people... Their work is diminished because their two good images from the shoot are balanced by the 8 or 10 other poorer ones that they put up at the same time.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, put their hero image. Find the one that they think is what they want to aspire to, that they're happiest with the shoot. that they've got and put that one up. And don't use the word sneaky peek. Ooh, let's have a sneaky peek. I hate the sneaky peek.
Yeah.
You know. But, you know, I'm a man of opinions, as you know, Bruce. But I think also what we mentioned last week about this building the confidence to say, yes, well, I think I'm ready, was, you know, we talked about, you know, the critic, the mentor, the sycophant, the friend, and your own voice.
Yep.
There's five voices that are in your photography. Well, I think, yeah, you need to build those relationships as you're developing your style and developing your confidence to know, you know, to have some balance, because you're going to be your own worst critic. You'll be far more critical on yourself than your clients probably will ever be.
Yeah.
So your own voice can be a problem. Yeah. You can really sell yourself down and diminish your abilities. Even if your abilities aren't that good, your vision and your efforts that you're putting in may be quite worthy. You just got to build a skill level. So you got to be careful of your own voice. Maybe find a mentor, depending on what type of photography you want to do. Mm-hmm. Definitely find a critic, but make sure it's one who's not like me. make sure you find someone who's got balance and not too many rules. You know, I don't have a lot of rules, but I don't have a lot of balance. But you don't want to find a mentor or a critic who has a lot of rules in their photography, because photography is an art form. There shouldn't be any rules. But find someone who can make alternate suggestions to what you did shoot. Alternate viewpoints is probably a better way to put it. That's great, but did you also think of this? Or that's great, how about you see it from this perspective? Or how about from that crop? You know, that sort of stuff. You know, or why the hell is that pole coming out of their head? You know, whatever it needed to be, you know. Or why did you use that lens? Yeah, that sort of stuff. Criticism that isn't really necessary criticism. It's more, suggestive learning.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think if you're building to be a photographer, you need those voices in your corner to start with. Mm-hmm. And when you start agreeing with what the mentor's saying, you're starting to take on board part of what the critic's saying, you're trying to avoid the sycophant and you're not beating yourself up too much, then you're probably ready to do it.
Yep.
Yeah. And, that was I only read that this afternoon from Richard, but they were my sort of immediate thoughts.
Yeah.
Thoughts on that, you know. And as I said, it's like trying to be a parent. You can't wait for the moment you're ready.
There's one other thing. I don't know whether Glenn will agree with me on this one, but I would say that once you have sat down and analysed, you know, the shoot in question and worked out what you feel is fair compensation for the job in at hand, if the client tries to undercut you, I would say be prepared to walk away.
Always, yeah.
Be prepared to say, no, I'm sorry, it's not worth my time and my effort for that sort of return. And play hardball. And yes, you're going to lose some jobs by doing that, but I think you build some credibility by doing it as well.
Yeah. And look, you may be starting out and selling yourself as a photographer with no clients. Yeah. So you haven't got a job specifically that you're trying to book. You're just trying to say, well, this is what I'm going to charge.
Yep.
And just remember, in if someone says, well, how much do you charge? Well, it's $500. Shut up. Don't say anything. Yeah, first person to talk loses. If they say, oh, it was a bit more than I haven't got that kind of money. Well, when will you have it? That's your first response. what they're saying, when someone says, I haven't got the money, that means they haven't got the money now.
Yeah.
Or this isn't money I hadn't planned on it being that much, but gee, maybe I could get that if you have a payment plan or you make alternatives.
Yep.
But don't get into a bartering arrangement where everyone is trying to haggle the price down. This is your price.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if they choose to, if they say you're too expensive, well, then they're not the customers for you.
Yep.
You don't want to win every customer. The last thing you want is to win. I mean, the person who wants the cheapest is usually the worst problem. They're the most, they have the most demands and the most unrealistic expectations of what they get for their $14.99 session at Woolworths or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah.
So find that balance. But if you're thinking, well, I'd like to go start doing whatever type of photography it is, you know. If you want to do landscapes, I'd be thinking, well, you know, what, what kind of prints am I going to be doing?
Yeah.
What am I going to do with the images? Where am I going to sell them? Am I going to do limited editions? Am I going to do, fine art editions? Am I going to, how am I going to, you can't go out and take 1,000 great images. You might have 6 or 10 images. Well, how are you going to monetize those 6 or 10 images whilst you're starting out?
Yep.
To build a business out of it, you know? And, your limited editions and your serigraphs and all your different types of, ways of having the same image printed different sizes. And that's when you start making your money, Are you going to markets? Are you going to art galleries? That all makes a decision about where you have to price point your products. Are you selling touristy type photos in a touristy location? Well, then maybe you're not selling framed matted prints because they're a pain in the ass. You're selling folded, rolled up images.
Yep.
So people can take them home easy. You got to find out what your market is. There's all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But as always, Richard, he's a thinking man's person from Geelong, Richard, and he always sets us some good questions.
Now, while we're on this topic of how do you charge, I came across a great rant on the New York Times website in their Sunday review section, and the opinion piece was entitled "Slaves of the Internet Unite." And it's by Tim Crider, and it's a very good piece. I'll just read the first couple of paragraphs and then I'll let you guys go and read the rest. "Not long ago, I received, in a single week, 3 invitations to write an original piece for publication or give a prepared speech in exchange for no money. As with stink bugs, it's not any one instance of this request, but their sheer number and relentlessness that makes them so tiresome. It also makes composing a polite response a heroic exercise in restraint. People who would consider it a bizarre breach of conduct to expect anyone to give them a haircut or a can of soda at no cost will ask you with a straight face and a clear conscience whether you wouldn't be willing to write an essay or draw an illustration for them for nothing. They often start by telling you how much they admire your work, although not enough evidently to pay 1 cent for it. Unfortunately, we don't have the budget to offer compensation to our contributors, is how the pertinent line usually starts. But just as often, they simply omit any mention of payment." Anyway, it goes on. It's a great piece, and it does mention photography later on, but it just goes to show how this problem that we constantly talk about, in the photographic circles is not limited only to photography. So the link will be in the show notes. Have a read. It's a great read.
I wonder if you wrote that piece free of charge or if you charged for it. The question has to be asked. Someone should email him. Now, tell me about this Lightroom plugin you came across this week.
Picure, PICCURE, and the website is picure.com.
Picure, I get it.
Picure.
You're curing your pics. I get it. That's where they're coming from.
Yeah.
What a crap name.
Yeah, it's a crap.
It is.
It doesn't. I haven't had a chance to look at whether there's a free trial offer or whether you've got to buy this straight up or whatever. I just came across it, had a quick look at the website today. Basically, what this plugin does, and like as Glenn said, it's a plugin for Lightroom, and what it claims to do, and if we can believe the sample images on their website, it seems to do it pretty damn well, is to take images that suffered from a little bit, and I think we need to stress, a little bit of motion blur, and it somehow manages to correct for that motion blur and give you sharp, stable-looking images after you've used the plugin. Like I said, the sample images that they've got on the gallery on the website look amazing.
I'm downloading the 14-day free trial as we speak.
Oh, so there you go. It's a 14-day free trial. Okay.
They do it. Yeah. So, For all my shaky photos I take whilst I'm away, I should download it next week. That way I can fix all my bad photos from my trip.
Well, obviously, the 14 days will only start from the moment you install it. So.
Oh, yeah, no, good point.
Yeah. So how much is it to buy?
Let's have a gander. Poitras now, it says here. This must be from Joyzy. spell it P. Oh, yeah, no. That's pretty good. $85.
Okay. Well, that's not too bad. I mean,
it's just $85.03.
Right. Okay.
I've got a feeling that must be a conversion, currency conversion.
Right. Okay.
It's extremely accurate, I have to say. Yeah. Let's have a transfer that to United States dollars and see what those say. So, $85.03 Australian. And, oh dear, maybe I shouldn't have done that. The lovely picture of the Taj Mahal has gone from, I think they've actually put motion blur in Photoshop and then they've taken it off, quite frankly.
I sometimes wonder about things like that. But
that's exactly what it looks like, though, I have to tell you. It doesn't look like actual blur. It looks right. Like motion blur. So, which is something I've been thinking of having a bit of a play with whilst away, is doing a lot of motion blur images, funnily enough.
As in deliberate
blur, yeah.
Okay.
But seriously, really, really shaking the living daylights out of the camera to try and get some unusual. Oh, stop downloading multiple copies of the same thing, Glenn. You know, I'm a male, I can't multitask. I can't. Here we go. Hit the purchase button, that'll make all the difference. Here we go. No, it still says $85.03. It won't let me go to the US. So, sound. Look, I tell you, if it works,
yeah,
and if you do a lot of sort of blurred images,
mm-hmm.
Sounds like a pretty good investment to me.
Definitely,
if it saves one image, yeah, if it saves one image that's that you is lost otherwise,
yeah,
that's pretty good.
Definitely,
that's pretty darn good. So,
definitely. So, I'm now downloading the 14-day trial as well. So.
Excellent. Let's see if my 14 days runs out before your 14 days. Let's see how we go. But no, yeah. I like to look at that because, I mean, I suffer from a lot of handshake.
Yep.
Yeah, a lot. I struggle with slow shutter speeds. And for me, slow is anything below 4,000th of a second. below about 200th of a second, I start getting a bit concerned.
Yeah, right.
So it could be just the thing. We'll see.
Hmm.
So let's both download it, trial it, and we'll review it in a couple of episodes' time and see if it's worthwhile. Let's try to get freebies from them.
Yeah, and if anyone has already used it or is going to download it and try it out now that you've heard about it, we'd love to hear your thoughts on it as well.
Either
flick us an email or put something on the Facebook page wall and let us know your thoughts.
Absolutely.
Now, what did you come across this week?
Well, the thing I came was actually a Facebook post by a guy called Bruce Williams. His name was.
Oh, okay.
He made a comment on his Facebook wall because he apparently hasn't been taking many photos of late.
Right.
And he sort of got up one morning to go take some photos. Finally.
Okay.
Funnily enough, it all looked kind of the same except the lights. Anyway, who am I to speak? But he mentioned a really salient point that I thought he might not have realised he'd said it, but it was fantastic.
Oh, okay.
And that is, it was talking about his lack of inspiration for taking photographs after going somewhere exotic and beautiful and wonderful.
Right. Okay. Yes.
Just in case you weren't sure, it's you we're talking about, Bruce.
Yes, I gathered that.
Just in case. just in case I was a little too subtle there.
No. I got where you were going.
I don't do subtlety well, so I'm not sure if I was being too subtle that time and confused you.
You're subtle like a sledgehammer, mate.
Wrapped in a napkin or something.
So what's your point?
No, it was a great point that we all suffer from this. We go somewhere exotic or we go to some amazing holiday shoot and then we come home to our normal lives to shoot and the gloss is gone.
Yeah.
It's hard to get out there and to want to shoot.
I think it all comes back to that old adage of familiarity breeds contempt. Just that, you come back to the place where you live and you are familiar with the way it looks. You've seen it on sunny days, you've seen it on rainy days, you've seen it on windy days, and you're just so familiar with it that you don't see the photographic potential in it. After having been... Well, okay.
No, I think you, before you go on that trip,
yeah.
If you were to see great lighters on your normal location, you'd get excited about it.
Oh, yes, yes.
But when you come after the trip, because those locations are just so powerful in your mind still, you feel everything else sort of pales by comparison. Even if it would have been wonderful to you, you know, 2 weeks before your holiday, it's hard to get the passion to shoot it.
Yeah.
Because yes, it's familiar, but it's still cool stuff on if it's a lovely sunset or sunrise or whatever, you know. Yeah. I have this problem when I travel and shoot great faces.
Right.
So when I have to come back and I look at just, you know, the normal faces I get to shoot normally.
Yeah.
It's like, you know. Yeah, it's almost like you've got to go through this dip where everything falls off. You go down and you've lose that inspiration for a while, and this other place sort of has to wear off somewhat,
right?
Before you can start to build the interest in shooting what you used to shoot before the trip,
right.
And that used to get pleasure out of before the trip. Mm-hmm. Now, it's like fly fishing. You know, I've got this little stream I like to fish all the time. And it's nothing particularly special, but it's my little place and I love it and everything else. But then I'll go to somewhere like New Zealand and be absolutely spoiled for the most incredible places with incredible size fish. And then most of the day, you come home to your own dinky little place again. It's like, you know.
But it's not the
after
same.
A while, after a while, your juices, you start to – you start to pine for the familiar, I guess, as well, somewhat, and that's local things start to become nice again. But
right.
it's definitely you really hit on a big thing. It's a thing a lot of photographers do suffer from after trips.
Yeah, right.
This big fall off of passion for shooting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I had to write that down as soon as I saw you mention that, because I thought, yeah, I see it all the time, and it's something I have to struggle with. As well, yeah, I'll come back from somewhere and I've got to go do just a normal workshop in Melbourne, which is, as much as I love it,
yeah,
it's not quite the same as, you know, jaunting around and doing it in other
shooting
places.
A Diwali festival in India, yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's like, okay, I'm back to normality.
Yeah.
And you've got to, you know, consciously not let yourself fall into that dip or try and reduce the depth of it as best as possible, you know. And try and find the best bit, which is why, you know, whilst I'm not a big fan of forcing yourself to go out and shoot, I'm not a big fan of these 365 projects and that sort of stuff.
Right.
I don't think you can force the muse.
Yep.
But you can kind of feed it a little bit, you know, just by having. And that's what I think is important for you. If you just carried that camera to and from work, at some point something's going to inspire you to want to shoot, and the very act of therefore then pulling it out,
yep,
starts that process back up from the dip.
Yeah.
You know. But if you don't have that with you, then you just, yeah, your vision, you're not seeing the world quite with the same potential you would have if you could have taken a photo of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll always drive over a river and look at it with some longing, but knowing I haven't got my rod in the back of the car, it's a different feeling than if I did.
Yeah.
The potential I could stop and maybe have a bit of a fish, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same kind of emotional journey, I guess, you know.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, I thought that was a pretty cool point that you made then. I'm quite sure if you talk to a lot of people, that they've all been through similar fall-offs after a trip.
Right. Yeah, interesting.
So, yeah, I was fascinated by that. That was pretty darn cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're right in saying that, you know, I'd made a comment and you felt like I possibly didn't realise the depth of what I'd said I hadn't.
Yeah, but that's the truth, though, because you're living it as well. You know, and plus I've seen this so many times.
Yeah.
I've lived it so many times that it's something I'm consciously aware of. Where not many other people necessarily are. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And speaking of what else has happened in this week, a week is a long time in photography. Last week we were all hot and heavy about whatever camera it was that had that 28-200 2.8.
Oh yes, the Sony RX10. Yep,
that's right. So Olympus this week is 28-300 2.8.
Serious?
28 to the new Olympus Stylus.
So right? So what's that? That's about 11 times optical zoom. Wow.
Well, yeah, 11.02 on over 11 times zoom.
Yeah,
28-300 constant 2.8.
Wow, wow,
dear. So I'm still waiting for my 8 mil to 1,000 mil 2.8, but, you know.
We'll you might closer. Be waiting a little while for that one.
Yeah, but, you know, if someone had told me 28 to 300 2.8, yeah, 10 years ago, we'd be laughing then.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was you know, so the Olympus Stylus. Well, I've got to tell you, it's a good-looking camera, Joe. It's one of the super zoom cameras, you know, the cameras with all, you know, fixed lens. But
right, so so it's one of those sort of prosumer, looks like a DSLR,
but it looks like an Olympus OMD or OME EM 1.796 or whatever they call it. So it looks like a real camera,
yeah.
And so with a 28 to 300 2.8 lens on it, it's pretty darn versatile too.
Wow!
So it's been getting some great reviews. So, I mean, some of the photos of postage stamps and bottles of alcohol I've seen on it so far look exceptionally.
Just stunning.
Well, it's, they look okay. Let's put it that way. I think once again for that that versatile. Now I also got into the old debate. Somebody asking questions again on Facebook about what if you could only have one camera and one lens, what would it be? Because I posted a sort of a joke photo up on Facebook. I had like 10 cameras and like 20 lenses and yeah, 5 flash guns and all this stuff. So packing for India. Right. And some people took it literally. That's what I was taking. You know? I was mad. Yeah, I'm only taking half of that. someone once again came up with, you know, if you could only take one camera and lens, which would it be? So, of course, I had to be a smartest and say, you know, the right one.
Yep.
The right one for the shot I was doing. Absolutely. Yeah. But I still came back to the old, you know, I've got to tell something like the Olympus Stylus might not be a bad option.
Yeah.
If you could only take one camera, yeah, 28 to 300 2.8, that's pretty versatile.
Man, that's awesome.
And if the quality's there, it doesn't have to be an SLR. It's just got to be of a quality of image that you're acceptably happy with, you know. But as I said on the thing, yeah, something like a 7D and like an 18 to 270 is a pretty versatile general purpose kit, you know. Mm-hmm. I use that when I'm shooting my kids. Because, you know, they're unpredictable little things. They run around everywhere. So a lens that's that sort of versatility is pretty, pretty handy.
Yep.
But, Olympus Stylus 128 to 300 2.8. It's got me excited. That hadn't been released or I hadn't seen it being released when the woman asked the question. So.
Yeah, right.
Now, the other thing I came across this week.
Yeah.
And, frankly, it sort of soured my whole week. It sort of put me off.
Okay. Yeah.
Quite a bit. I had to bow before the new god of light painting.
Oh, okay.
This absolute smartass by the name of Darren Pearson.
Oh, okay.
I sent you a link, so let's put that link in the show notes.
Yeah.
This just irritating person that he is, just these people just really give me the Tom tits, I tell you. he does... time lapse.
Yep.
Nighttime time lapse photography, light painting.
Okay.
But the type of light painting he does, say he'll do a character and he'll animate it through the scene. So he's got this, the one I saw was this skeleton skateboarding through parks, you know, down rails, jumping over stuff and everything.
Right.
Guess what? A two-minute long video. The amount of work, the amount of effort, the amount of vision involved in doing this thing, it's quite frankly sickening. I hate him with a passion, as I hate anyone with talent. But you just got to see this video, Bruce. It is
wow.
It's just mind-blowing that what people can do. You know?
Okay.
So Darren Pearson, I think we should have you know, like they have like the Emmy Awards and the what was the other one? Not the Logies because people don't understand what those overseas. The Grammys, the Emmys, and the Oscars. That's it, the Oscar Awards. Yeah. Well, we know they've got the Razzies, which is like the opposite of the Oscars.
No, what's the Razzies?
Oh, well, the Razzies is for all the worst movies of the year.
Oh.
And you win, like, worst actor, you know, worst movie, worst director, all that sort of stuff.
Okay.
So you should check them out. They're pretty funny.
Okay.
Well, I'm thinking we should come out with the Assies. The smart Assies.
Right.
All these smart-ass photographers out there who've got all this ridiculous skill doing all this amazing stuff.
Right.
We should be able to publicly humiliate them somehow, you know. somehow, some way. Anyway, so check this guy out. He is. I've only seen one of his videos. I'm going to have to go and hunt up some more because it's just amazing. I love it. It's, as I said, I'm just jealous, as you could possibly tell.
Yep. Well, I shall definitely check that out after the show.
The one big thing that came out of my hour-long David Duchemin video this week, I thought I'd talk about, was he made a point about how we visually look at the photographs and how we follow photographs left to right.
Okay.
But not because that's how we read, but that's because how visual storytelling is done. So it doesn't really matter, and he's discussed this with lots of people, it doesn't matter whether you're whether you read right to left, left to right, up or down, as all the variations of writing is. We don't look at photographs based on how we read.
Okay.
We look at photographs based on visual storytelling. It's a definite left to right. So you look at a Bollywood movie, you look at a Chinese movie, all the way things are framed is left to right, all the power of imagery.
Right.
And he used a great example to say how your composition can totally change the tension and feeling in an image based on whether you compose it left to right or right to left. Okay. Right. And the example he used was a man walking down a hill.
Okay.
And so the hill in shot A starts on the left and goes down to the right, and the man's walking down the hill.
Right.
The shot B is the hill starting on the right, going down to the left.
Yep.
If you looked at those two photographs, the same photograph flipped, the man on the left appears to be going down the hill faster than the man on the right.
Wow.
And the reason for that is your eye, because you're going right to left to right, and the hill's going down, that you follow that down, that sort of, you sort of rush down the hill with your eye, because that's the pathway your eye's already going.
Yep.
Whereas the hill going the other way, you're actually pushing into him because you're reading from left to right and he's coming from right to left.
Yep.
You actually sort of hit him with your vision and sort of slow him as he comes down the hill. You sort of push into him. And you know what? I checked it. I tried it. And it works.
Yeah, right.
It's visually, they feel so very, very different. Yeah, it's quite amazing. Yeah, so that was a big, big eye opening. Yeah, I mean, this stuff, as I said about this last week, the stuff that you do instinctively without thinking about it, it's only when people point it out in words do you start realizing why you do some of the stuff you do.
Yeah. Yep.
It's like some people often ask me, why did you compose it like that? And I'll have no idea until I have to explain it. When I explain it, I'll know why. Yeah. I'll point out all the elements, why it's composed the way it is. But I didn't consciously think that when I shot it. But there's stuff like that. It's only when things get put into words do we have some of our greatest learning.
Yeah, right.
The stupidest, the most simplistic thing of all, he mentioned out of the video, was we see horizontally, not vertically.
Okay.
So our eyes, our vision is horizontal. Our vision isn't vertical per se.
Right.
So how we compose, our choice to compose something vertically is almost going against the grain of how we see, therefore has a different impact than if we compose the same thing horizontally.
Right.
And you try and compose, if you try and look at composing the same scene, horizontal, vertical, it tells very, very different stories because of how our brain processes horizontal and vertical imagery.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so once again, it's just like, of course we see horizontally. Yeah, yeah. You put your hands out left to right, and you can see a lot more width than you can if you do up and down. You know, but once again, it's that silly.
That's obvious.
Oh yeah, but it's obvious, but not until you think about it. Okay. You know, if you start thinking about it but I'm talking about thinking about it from a photographic point of view, from how you view an image, how you view a scene, and how you're going to think about composing that. Yeah, as where's the visual strength in the composition based on how the human eye perceives the world.
Mm-hmm. You know?
So I thought that was another. Those are two sort of key things I got out of the. If you can get, look, tell you what, whilst I joke, there's 14 hours of this stuff.
Yeah,
there's two key things in 1 hour, and there's more than that. But there's two key things in 1 hour. It's like, of course, I'm like, why didn't I think of that before? Or have I been doing that? Never. You know, that's not bad for 1 hour's footage, you know?
Yeah.
And if you break it down, the whole thing was like $50 for 14 hours. So I'm only paying, $3 an hour. So it's $1.50 a lesson. That's not bad. You know, if I learn two things, it's $1.50 each one. That's some pretty cool stuff. So, I'm enjoying that. And I came across two interesting quotes this week that I kind of liked, that sort of going in with some of our themes we've been going on over the last few weeks. And one of them is that sharpness is a bourgeois concept by Henri Cartier-Bresson.
Okay.
Yeah. So in other words, we talk about, we don't need sharper photographs. We need deeper ones, as we said last week. You know, look at the sharpness. Look at the color tone. Oh, they're so accurate. And no one says that.
Yeah.
So sharpness is this, let's call it the internet, and rather than a bourgeois concept, let's call it an internet concept these days. Oh, is it tack sharp? It doesn't have to be tack sharp. I don't know. But rather bourgeois of you to insist on it being tack sharp. Thank God we've got Picure to fix all those bad photographs. But that's the thing, so that was kind of cool. I mean, we are talking art. It doesn't got to be sharp, you know?
Yep.
But also, it can't be blurry just because it's accidentally that way. It's got to be, our friend Adam Davidson has been doing some deliberate, 5 second and 10 second handheld landscapes last night.
Yep.
I saw on Facebook. Yes. And for the same thing, he's experimenting with movement within the frame to change the feel of an image.
Yep.
So it's not out of focus, soft and blurry by accident. Is out of focus, soft and blurry, deliberately.
Very deliberately, yeah.
Yeah, and when I look at his photographs, I don't think he hasn't gone far enough. He hasn't put enough movement into them for my taste.
Right.
I think he needs to go even more extreme, but that's just my own taste. So that was one interesting little quote. And the other one is, great photography is about depth of feeling, not depth of field.
Nice.
That's another internet thing, isn't it, really, when you think about it? And that's by a guy called Peter Adams, which I thought was a kind of a cool little quote, And that sort of, you put the two of those things together about sharpness and depth of feeling. We don't need sharper photos, we just need deeper ones. They sort of come together in one, don't they? So that were two little quotes I enjoyed this week, I've got to say.
Nice.
And then I came across another new app, a new photo sharing app, which...
because we don't have enough.
I know. This one's called Dubble, D-U-B-B-L-E, like bubble but with a D.
Oh, okay.
And basically it's double exposure photographs.
Oh, okay.
Okay. But you put up a single image and somebody else puts up a single image and they get mushed together.
Oh, okay.
So you're not really in control of the process of...
So when you say mushed together, is it like a 50% opacity thing? So they're just layered straight over the top of each other?
I don't think so. I haven't seen exactly how it's done yet. But,
right.
Because I only found it about 15 minutes before coming on here.
Okay.
But I've downloaded it. I'm ready to have a play tonight. But I think once again... And here's the thing once again. Yes, it's a bit daft. It's probably a bit silly.
Yep.
But you know what it does do?
Open up your thoughts.
It can change your vision. Yeah, it can change your vision of your images again. It can change how you see and feel and think. And, having someone else's art embedded into yours can totally change the sum of both. Make it better, make it worse, make it different, make you think. Who knows? But it's a worthy thing to have a play with, I think.
Hmm.
So that was my week of coming across stuff. And, I've the rest of the thing, I've been building up a shoot list. I'm a big believer, I think I've said before, in pre-visualizing the types of things you're going to shoot before you travel.
Right.
Have I mentioned this? I'm not sure.
No.
So I'm a firm believer in keywords. Yeah, what is it? What emotive words speak to you about a place? What are your expectations as far as the images? What do you visualize? If you visualize your holiday at the end of it and all the great photos you have, what are those images?
Right.
And then write them down. Yeah,
Beforehand.
It's a shoot list.
Okay.
You're building a shoot list of what you're planning and thinking and expecting to shoot.
Does that potentially close your mind to spontaneous things, though?
I don't think so. Remember, we're not talking about, let's take a photo of a man walking next to a red wall. Nothing as specific as that.
Right.
But it might be ruin. It might be spice.
Okay. You know,
thinking of emotive words, not an exact visual shot.
Oh, okay. Right.
just all these emotive stuff. So I've been building on that all week, and I'm up to 49 words.
Nice. And
visual ideas of my expectation. So, but I was, why I'm bringing this up is I'm trying to plan how I'm going to shoot. I'm trying to pre-visualize the way I will shoot in a place of chaos, which is where we're headed. I'm headed.
Yep.
The heading of my piece of paper I was going to take with me was called India Shoot List. Yeah, really emotive. Yeah, really, 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 yeah, it sort of struck a bone, made me think hard and long. No, it didn't. So I changed it, and right. Then I changed it again, and then I changed it again, and I finally settled with don't think, feel.
Fair enough.
So my whole motto for India is don't think, feel. Don't shoot till you feel.
Yeah, right.
So don't arrive and go, don't. Yeah, stop. Think. Don't think. Stop and wait until you start feeling the place.
Yeah.
Before you start shooting, don't be in a hurry to shoot. If you've got time and you're traveling, I'm not talking your Contiki tours where you're doing 37 countries in half an hour. might only be 30 minutes, how long do you need to shoot for? 5 of those 30 minutes, or wait 20 till you start to feel?
Yeah.
So my motto for the trip is, don't think, feel. Don't shoot until you see the whites of their eyes. Don't shoot till you have some feeling.
Yeah,
because if you feel something, your photo's always going to be better for it.
Yep.
Rather than, isn't that a cool thing? Isn't that, rather than breaking, as you're saying, breaking things down into the object and the clinical side of it.
Yep.
Wait till you have an emotive response to something and try and shoot that. Yeah. Find the things that anger is, disgust is, make us laugh, make us upset, make us confronted, and shoot those things. Yeah, but they're all feelings.
Yep.
So wait till you have some of those feelings and whatever feelings stir up, and it could be repulsion, it could, who knows what it'd be, but that's what you shoot.
Mm.
So it's kind of my mental process for this trip.
Excellent.
Which I thought it was maybe worthwhile sharing, and maybe I'll tell you when I get back.
Yeah.
whether it was successful or not, But yeah, that's it. That's my week in a nutshell.
Excellent. All right. Well, enjoy your trip to India.
I will indeed.
So you're gone for 8 days?
Yeah. So I leave on Saturday night. Yeah. Workshop, go home, kiss the kids, go to the airport.
So by the time this podcast comes out, Glyn will probably be in Delhi.
Yeah, I will indeed. Yeah. So it's Sunday lunchtime, and this comes out Sunday lunchtime. So, yeah.
So there'll be no podcast the following Sunday.
Yes.
But there will be the week after that.
Yes, could be a bumper issue.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Excellent.
Yeah, no, that was crap, Bruce. Let's talk about something else.
All right, mate. Well, you have a safe trip.
Thank you.
And enjoy the Diwali festival.
I will. And to all our lovely listeners, goodbye.
See you, mate.
We never know, just in case.
Yeah. In case you don't make it back.
Well, you never know. Or I've just decided to stay. You wanted it. Kids have been driving me a bit crazy this week.
Right.
Worse of all, just not coming home.
All right, mate.
Good. I look forward to sharing some images when we get back.
All right. Talk to you in 2 weeks.
Take care, mate.
See ya.
Bye, everyone.
Shutters Inc., another audio2you.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.